This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded April 21st, 2014, episode 195, Nuanced, Nomadic, Non-Essentials.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
It's just us again this week, dude.
Mm-hmm. Us and you and me in a Weidlar poster. Our respective Weidlar posters. I have one up now as well.
Excellent. Yeah. Haven't actually put mine up yet. I've got it mounted on a backboard and, you know, all that sort of jazz. Yep.
Yeah, I'm terrible with I'm always just like, masking tape. It'll stick to the wall, right?
Well, last time I tried to use bloody the BluTac stuff. You know, I tried to put BluTac up on, and it just falls. It's shit.
I've never gotten that stuff to work ever. I think it's like, I'd expect it to work more in like warmer climates like yours, but it gets cold and it just immediately falls off.
Right. Yeah, no, it was hopeless. It lasted like a day or two and then all my posters just fell out. And it leaves the BluTac residue behind. You think I can get that crap off? No.
No.
You've probably seen in my videos near my whiteboard all this blue crap on the wall. That's what that is.
Man, you're gonna have to paint when you leave now. You know, I guess you're the landlord too, but you know, if you had a landlord, he would be pissed.
And now I didn't bother getting it off, so now I've covered up a lot of it with my new acoustic panels
that I've made. Yeah.
So yeah.
Right.
Exactly. If you can't get rid of it, just cover it up. Like the old hole in the wall, you put a picture over
Yeah,
it,
exactly. Yeah.
Couldn't be bothered patching that.
Start throwing your soldering iron, you're getting angry or something and put it through the wall.
Yep.
So you said you might get a new place. Is this kind of new for you?
Well, it's not new. I did it 3 years ago.
Yeah, but what are you, like a turtle? You're a hermit crab? You just keep upgrading your shell every year, every couple of years?
Well, everyone does that with their job, don't they?
I suppose so. Yeah, I guess so.
I think 2-3 years is the average time for someone in our industry to turn over their job, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right number. That sounds about right. So now it's just bigger and better offices for you, and leaving a trail of unoccupied commercial space you can sell out and rent out to people, right?
I can rent out to people. That's right. Hopefully,
Dave is the landlord now.
Oh goodness!
What you should do is somehow make sure they don't notice the BluTac when they move in, right? And then about 6 months later, you're like, what is this BluTac over here?
Right.
You just lost your security deposit.
Oh, goodness. Yes, I'm thinking about it. I just sort of made the spur of the moment. Well, there were two decisions. One was that, we're looking at sort of, you know, for investment, financial sort of reasons, we're looking at, getting a commercial property. And I thought, well, if we're going to do that, instead of just, buying one and then renting it out as an investment, why don't I buy it and then move into it and, step up, use it myself.
Yeah. Right.
And then rent out my current one. Why not?
You're only going to buy something that you like, and that's probably going to be a good indication that other people would like it, instead of just being like, someone will probably like this.
Now, well, maybe, but, the other thing is that it makes the choice easy. If anyone's ever tried to buy an investment, investment place, an investment property,
I'll speak for me, no.
Right, okay, well, it's an infinite, I've never done it myself. Well, technically, we got this as an investment, but I moved into it, I'm basically doing that again. And because there's just an infinite amount of choice, but if your choice is based on what you want for yourself, then it totally limits it down and just makes it that much easier.
Oh, you're saying it just narrows the field even?
Easier. It just makes the choice a lot easier rather than just having an infinite amount of choice,
Right. See, well, and all you need to do is find...
Do that.
one person that's, you know, similar enough to you, and they'll probably rent it out afterwards.
Well,
you get 110,000 subscribers on YouTube, I'm sure one of them might want to, you know.
You're right. Or one, if anyone wants my old, like, well, I've got to find it yet. I haven't even started looking. Right after the show, I'm going to go talk to the real estate agent and start looking. But it's not looking good, dude. I mean, no? It's bloody expensive. Well, this is Sydney, right?
Well, it's Cleveland has got tons of investment properties. I'm just saying, you know.
For the Detroit price as well. Of a VCR, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
How much does a VCR cost these days?
Well, they're antique items, so you know, 200 grand.
Right, so they've gone up, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you were also talking about mechanical stuff. That was the other thing that surprised me about this, though.
Here's the original idea, right? Like a few weeks back, I thought, you know, a month ago or 2 months ago, we started, talking about, we might... you know, get into hideous debt again and try and get an investment property, right? It's not like I got money coming out my ears, you know.
Right.
And then I thought, well, if I'm going to upgrade, why not get better internet, you know? So,
of course,
like,
yeah. You're always complaining
about
that.
Office, yeah, exactly. Move into an office which is slightly bigger, you know. I'd also want an upgrade in size, of course. You know, no point moving in the same size box. So that was my requirement, is that I'd look around and I'd search for something with, you know, a kick-ass internet connection. You think I could find one? No.
Well, you are the backwaters, so, you know.
That idea went well because our national broadband network that they're installing. Right?
Yeah.
There is not a single commercial office park in all of Sydney that has the national broadband network connected. It's ridiculous. No. They're the only place they're installing it is new housing estate. So, I can go buy a new house in a
there
new
you go.
Housing
you should do
estate
that.
And I can get 40 megabits per second upload. Fantastic. Oh. Right?
God, that'd be awesome.
I know, right? Kick
Could
ass.
You just do that and just be like, well, this house is now my office, right?
You could, you know.
Yeah.
That's,
you know, and install like a fireman pole, right? You just,
yeah,
you're
right,
good,
yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah, I know. That's my dream is to have a fireman pole.
Everyone, Dave.
Yeah. Anyway, so I looked around, you know, because the National Broadband Network's got this map on their website showing exactly which areas are connected, which areas will be connected, et cetera, and there was nothing.
Huh.
You know, so, basically nothing. So, you know, I went, screw that. And then I got the idea of, going to upgrade, why don't I get a combined office and warehousey type space, if you know the ones I mean. Usually, like, you know, they're a big warehouse and you walk up the stairs to one of those mezzanine offices up top, you know, kind of thing. So you've got yourself the big roller door, you know, you can bring in big stuff and, you know, all that sort of jazz, sort of, you know, half and half kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could actually set up like a real mechanical workshop and have real toys out there, which is something I can't do here because this is a commercial office building. You know, it's not like I can bring up big lathes and CNC machines.
You can't jackhammer inside
an
office park,
exactly.
Right?
You know, I can't blow stuff up and, you know,
right,
and things like that.
Right.
And, of course, I can't do that at home. I've got nothing at home. You know, I've got like a little toolbox. You know, that's the extent of my mechanical workshop at home, and it's always been very disappointing. So I can't, you know, go out and buy all these cool things you see on the auction sites. You know, oh look, there's a magnetic imaging resonance machine. Oh, holy shit, for $50! But no, you think I can get it? No.
Oh right. Well, you wouldn't want that either. Local Sydney man cut in half after he turns on magnet and a bunch of metal stuff was sitting behind him.
That's it.
So does this mean though that you are going to be getting into like machining as well? Or like we talking like heavy duty type stuff as well?
Well, I could, right? I mean, I've got no plans, right? But when I've got a space like that, you know, I always see, you know, I go through the auction sites and I see, oh yeah, look at that CNC machine, you know, and it's $1,000. And like, holy crap, you know, I'd love to have that and learn how to, you know, play with these things, but I've got nowhere to put it.
Am I mistaken in thinking that you made fun of me when I started learning machining? I mean, am I remembering this wrong? I thought I remembered you making fun of me and saying.
I don't think so. I don't think I made fun of you.
Okay. All right. Well. So the first plan is to buy a bunch of junk online and then learn how to use it afterwards. And I'm sure
the first step is to actually find a place that I can afford.
I guess you could start doing. I mean, if you really wanted to, then you could start upgrading. You know, pick and place type stuff as well. I mean, you could always find that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, like, you know, pick up, like I can't even use my reflow oven here in the office, right? Because the smell is just too bad, right? There's no ability to, you know, get fume extraction in here, and you know, just stuff like that. I just can't do. I can't use chemicals in here. I can't etch my own boards. I can't, you know, do all that sort of jazz. It's just impossible. You can't do that in a commercial office environment. I can, you know, I shouldn't even be soldering in here, you know.
Really? Oh wow. Okay.
Well, you know, at a lot of companies, you are not. It's against the OH&S rules. You're not allowed to solder in a reticulated air conditioned office environment.
Oh, because it's the air comes back through.
The
basically.
Air recirculates. Yeah, and yeah, stuff right, like that. And, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What about those, you know, they got those filter pads in the back of the solder fan thing. Don't those do everything?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
I was looking at them like, that's it? That's what we're doing here?
That's what we're doing. Yeah.
You know. Okay.
So anyway, you're like, so I have no idea. But once you've got the space, you would come up with ideas. You know, that's the thing
okay.
I'm thinking.
All right. So buy a lot of stuff, fill in the space, and then.
Yep, that's it. And then
redo
play
it
around with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Right, okay. Yep. So it's kind of like now, right? Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah, I just buy shit to play with, you know.
Right.
It's
yeah.
fun.
That's good. Okay, cool.
Why not?
But hey, man, if you're going to do it anyways, why? I think that makes a lot of sense. That's a good idea, and I'm sure there's a lot of cool stuff you could do.
Dream is just to have a a really well kitted out lab with lots of cool toys that they just dick around with.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Even if you don't do anything practical with it, they just
you're just like, oh yeah, I know I could build anything I need to, even though I don't have anything to build right now. Right?
Yeah,
that's the
idea. Well,
but what
why
if
did
scenario?
You buy a, why did you buy your CNC machine? I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Exactly. I mean,
right? You just wanted to play around with one, right?
I wanted to learn how to machine metal.
You probably had some end goal, or you maybe had some idea of what you might use it for, but ultimately it's just a toy, right, to play around with.
Yeah,
it's a hobby.
Yeah, right now it's definitely still a toy. It's there's nothing else happening with it right now. Much like you, everything comes in steps, right? I mean, first step, start an online electronics course. Next step, figure it out after the first step.
Right. Speaking of steps, you've got a big step coming up, don't you? That you won't even tell me about, you bastard.
Oh yeah, there's something big coming up. But I did take a step already. I'm working part time for a company called Supply Frame, and it's been great actually. So that's why I've been traveling a lot. Out to like LA and stuff like that, and working with them, and basically working on like new websites to work with the supply chain type stuff. So basically making finding parts easier. So, you know, obviously, you know, Fine Chips. So they own Fine Chips. Yep. They own Hackaday and stuff like that. So
they sponsored by Forum.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So, it's been great so far.
So you basically consult for them pretty much.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, it's like part time and it's been really good. I mean, great people and you know, the data that's out there, like I've never been a data guy, but just like the amount of data that's like available and like the stuff that you can learn about parts and how to find new parts that way and how to find like better price parts and stuff like that. It's just crazy. So I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff with that and kind of like helping develop new tools for that kind of thing. And like Dave alluded to, yeah, there's something big coming up. So yeah, I'm excited about that.
And
I will mention it
in a few weeks.
In 2 weeks. We got a guest show next week, so I'll mention it on the show in 2 weeks. Ooh, maybe I'll tell Dave before then. Maybe, probably not though. but yeah, so I've been traveling a lot more though because of this, and like I said, it's been a really good experience. But so I've been traveling, and obviously I'm also doing the the course, and the course I'm moving into the second week of contextual electronics.
Yep.
And so, you know, you're talking about you know, a big stationary lab. Well, what I've been starting to think about is like, well, what if I'm traveling and like Maker Faire, right? Maker Faire is in the middle.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you want a portable lab.
Of the course. And exactly, I need a portable lab. I need some way to actually be able to work on the road.
Mm.
And I've been kind of researching this thing, and it's tough, right? I mean, I'm sure you've looked at this kind of idea before. I mean,
yep.
Like just
like in a suitcase kind of thing, you know, that has a lab power supply. It's got an oscilloscope. It's got a multimeter. It's got a soldering iron, you know, and all your basic, you know, hand tools and stuff like that.
So the nice thing is that like, so the bench buddy, the thing that we're developing for contextual electronics, is actually would fit really well in there, right? It's like a multi-tool, right? It's supposed to have all that stuff. Yep. And so that would fit really well. But then you're right, like the soldering iron and having, you know, DMMs and everything else and everything you need for, you know, working on electronics, right? And I think I could figure that stuff out, right? There's Pelican cases. If I needed to, I could go big. I could do this, right? I know I can. It's a matter of money and how much hassle I want when I'm actually, you know, rolling stuff around if I'm going to rent a car or not.
Yep.
And but the thing that gets me is how do I get through airport security unmolested?
Tell us.
So I was thinking about this. I was walking the dogs with my wife and thinking about it, and I'm like, and I was thinking, you know, the only thing I've ever heard where you can lock your luggage and they can't open it is when you have a gun. That is
really
the only time that you legally have to lock your luggage.
Right.
They actually are not allowed to have a key for that. Everything else, they are allowed to cut the lock off.
Yeah.
Anything like that. So I was joking around with my wife about that and then I was talking to some friends about it and someone sent me a site. And there's a guy that does this, right? And he goes to conferences and all this other stuff, and he packs heat basically, and I was thinking about it, and the first thing I thought about it, I was like, oh man, Dave's gonna have a field day with this. Americans packing guns to keep things safe, right?
Yeah, of course. Well, you can't go to Hamvention with that. They ban you. There's a gun ban at Hamvention.
Yeah, that's coming up. The first year it's changed, right? But then I started remembering, and I remember reading about this in the past that I had just forgotten about it, where photographers would do the same thing. They would pack a starter pistol in with their camera gear because same kind of thing happened. They would pack these $5,000 lenses.
Yeah.
They get broken. And so they started packing starter pistols because starter pistols count as guns.
Ah, starters, right. Yeah, yeah.
And they're cheaper and everything else.
And they're not really a gun, right? You can't kill people, so you can, you know.
You could, but it'd be really hard.
You'd have to shoot him in the eye or something.
It'd be bad.
Right.
So this has been the first time I've ever legitimately considered buying a gun.
You Yanks, just to get around the fact that your TSA sucks and you live in a security, you know, live in a police state. So the answer for you Yanks is always more guns, more guns. That's always
the answer. There's the response, folks. I knew it.
Well, am I not wrong?
No, you're totally right. And I wouldn't even say police state, though. It's Kabuki theater, right? I mean, like, you know, there's still stuff that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And, right. I mean, some of it, you know, it discourages the stuff, but yeah, I mean, so basically this is for checking your luggage, right? I wouldn't be able to carry it on, obviously.
Right, of course.
But yeah, I mean, and it's serious,
well,
too.
Well, you wouldn't be able to carry on any electronics lab anyway, pretty much. I mean, imagine trying to get it through the scanner.
Right, well, yeah, and so Steve Hofer actually has a post about this on his site, and I'll link it in there, basically his thing is like, if you label everything and you have a note in there, please don't mess up my stuff, you know, please don't, you know, like, basically if you're nice about it and you just kind of like, you don't get angry, you know, you kind of stay in a zen state, you can do it, but it's still a hassle. Or you could check your baggage through, but they still might scan it and open it up and mess with your stuff.
Yeah,
and my main thing is just, I just want it to get there, right? And some people say,
right,
oh, well, you could ship it too, right? You could ship your stuff.
Oh, of course. Yeah, courier. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And that's another way to do it, and that's very legitimate.
And then it's guaranteed to get there. It's got tracking, you know, the whole thing.
Right, but then you have to, like, ship it to a hotel, and I don't know. Like, maybe that's better. But, you know, maybe a gun. Maybe a gun's the way to do it, too. I'm just very intrigued by the idea. I don't know. I'm just intrigued by
Yikes.
It.
Yikes. Your minds are just incredible how you think. I mean, it's just...
Well, thank you, Dave. That's so nice of you to say.
Unbelievable.
So I was talking to someone when I was out, you know, when I was out at EE Live. There was a startup that actually was doing some kind of like retrofit for guns for police officers, so it could tell when the gun was shot or fired or shot or reloaded or dropped or anything like that. And actually, really, really cool startup. But the guy was telling me about that too, and he said that he had talked to a gun salesperson, and basically, you know, you talk about like extra special handling, right? So this gun salesperson had, you know, done all the right things and checked all his bags through, and the bag didn't show up, right? You or me or Joe Blow, anyone else, your bag doesn't show up. They say, oh, we'll ship it to you, right? Well, his bag didn't show up, and he had ATF agents like standing over the baggage guy and making sure his bag got there, right? I mean, like
Right. Exactly, it's just because it's got a bloody AR-15 rifle in it, you know?
I don't think it had that, but yeah, I mean...
Well, are they going to do that for a starter pistol? Do they care what's in there? Do you have to declare what type of gun, or are you just, like, it's a start, you know?
I don't think so. You have to say if there's ammo with it, and then that makes things different. But if it's just, basically, if it's just like a tracked gun, you know, it has a serial number on it, that's ultimately what matters. And basically what you do is you show that it's in there, you put a special tag on it, you show that it's locked, and then it gets there.
Oh, you have to show... So you've got to open it up and show them that there's a gun in there.
Yes, right. And there's like a form.
So you've got to turn up to the airport and, you know, flash your gun.
Yeah. And so there's this really actually, this great site about it too. Just because it's this tech guy that's done this, and he basically, his story was he had traveled and he basically... put the approved locks on. You know, you can lock your luggage normally, but basically he got a bunch of stuff stolen and broken, and he said, you know what, that's it,
and I'm going for guns.
That's what it comes down to. You could totally do that, right? But you know that it's just a life hack, right? I mean, this is just one way to ensure that your stuff's gonna have a different handling criteria than otherwise, and I'm really interested in it. I have no interest in guns.
Yeah, but you're promoting the system.
Dave, it's already there, though, right?
You're perpetuating... come on.
Well, what's... I mean, like,
come
okay,
on.
So... I mean, yes. Maybe it perpetuates the system, but it's there for a reason, right? It's better than asking people to... I mean, like, it's like saying that, okay, people aren't going to have guns. Oh, you just can't have guns. Okay, but... That's just ignoring reality, right? I mean, people in America do have guns.
That's why you Yanks are in the situation that you're in.
Totally
different to every other country on the planet. That's why you guys are in your position, because your society, this is how your society thinks.
Well, I don't really care about the political issues right now, Dave. All I care about is my gear getting there safely. I don't care about owning guns. I don't care about anything else. I care about my gear getting there safely, and if that means that I have to do a workaround to make sure of that, right? If there was a way that I could pay 20 extra bucks and the same thing would happen, right? I would do that.
Well, it's called a courier.
And maybe that's shipping it. Maybe it is.
Well,
but,
then just bloody ship the thing.
Well, maybe I will. I mean, I want to try a bunch of different things, but I think this is just a really interesting life hack, and I know there's a lot of a lot of opinions around guns, but I don't care right now. That's not the point, you know. I don't think it's, you know, better or worse.
So what,
it's just,
okay, so what type of gun would you get?
The cheapest kind I could.
Right, one of those Saturday night specials, right?
Yeah, it was. No, that's why I was on like a sporting goods site, and I was looking at it, and
now you're on gun shopping sites.
No, it wasn't gun shop, Dave. It was like an outdoor store,
right,
you know?
Yeah, it was Walmart, right? Yeah,
it wasn't Walmart, but whatever. And it looked like a gun, but I'm pretty sure that, like, when you look at dimensions, and it was like, it said it fits in the palm of your hand or something super, super tiny, you know?
Dude, 3D print it. 3D print it.
There you go. Yeah.
And then you can get arrested for owning an illegal firearm.
Right, right. Yeah,
at least in some states. Other states, they don't give a shit. You know.
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah. I should have known this would have taken a dark turn. But Dave, let me tell you, I don't have any opinion on guns other than I'm interested in how this can help me hack around the system. And I think it's really interesting.
Nah, I think you're crazy. Just ship the bloody thing.
Yeah, maybe you're right, too. And that's the other question, right? Maybe it's too much hassle when you get there, right?
Get an account with FedEx or something and then just, you know.
Oh, yeah, I have one. Yeah. But, I mean, it's the same kind of thing, right? It's about, like, okay, so you could ship it somewhere, and it says it's delivered, and then it just disappears, right? There's no, like, who is there to...
You ship stuff to hotels. It's not going to vanish.
I don't know that. I mean...
Have a bit more faith in the human race. Really.
Okay. Sure.
Unbelievable.
Well, okay, so beyond the gun thing and beyond the shipping of stuff, there is actually some there was an interesting one on who was this? Oh, this is the guy that he's actually doing a Kickstarter thing as well. But he has a post about he actually has a full SMT workstation, and he actually built in a microscope into it too. He actually has a binocular microscope built in. It's like a nice little setup here. It's two like metal cases. I don't know if he'd
I've got it open. Yeah. He's put them into like an aluminium flight case kind of thing.
Yeah, like they're just cheapies from Harbor Freight. Yeah. But
yeah. And it's got like a wooden work surface. I assume you lift that up and there's tools underneath.
Yeah,
that work surface, right? That's where you keep the tools.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's got everything scope you need, in
there.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a little scope power in there supplies. Under the padded. Yeah.
The MM.
Yeah, that's a neat. Yeah, I would love to do something like that as like a build, you know, like as a project.
Right.
I don't know when I'd ever use it, but just the fact of doing it and figuring out how to do it optimally would make a real interesting video, you know.
Right. This kind of reminds me. So I've been really like obsessing over the tiny.
It's kind of like a Ben Heck style build. You know?
Right. Yeah, Ben did that portable 3D printer, actually.
The portable 3D printer and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a similar sort of thing.
And it's almost like a... I've been really into like the whole tiny house movement. I think I've mentioned that to you.
Yeah, you have.
And it's... I love it because it's like... It's the whole thing is like, you know, you live in these like less than 200 square foot houses and stuff like that. And basically... My engineer brain goes crazy because it's amazing set of constraints, you know? And it's the same kind of thing here where it's like you're trying to optimize every bit of space and...
Yep.
I think with me, it probably would just end up being messy.
There's so many people who would want these. You know, people living in dorm rooms, I hear all the time, you know, you Yanks who live in dorm rooms. Crazy. And you... and I hear it all the time. Look, oh, I haven't even got room for an oscilloscope, you know? And like, well, gee...
Yeah,
you
well,
know,
that is always a problem,
like this,
right?
Where you can keep it under the bed, slip it, pull it out, and boom, there's your little portable workshop. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's it, exactly. Like, you might have a great table, but if you have to repack everything every time, that's really disruptive. Yeah,
exactly. No, that's really disruptive. So how do you... So what requirement do you set? Does everything have to be battery-powered, or, you know, can you zip out a mains cord from it, you know? Like it's a vacuum cleaner, you know, have it coiled up inside and
I don't think, you know, you don't have to go off grid with this, Dave. I mean that would be
okay.
You'd have to go to a butane soldering iron at that point, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, well, you can a butane or a DC powered soldering iron, and then you can power
it.
You're
gonna carry around
batteries.
A friggin car battery.
Yeah, I know, you gotta carry around a lead acid battery, keep it charged up and everything. I think you would have to limited to a main thing.
Dave doesn't want people to be able to carry guns around, but he'd like to carry around this 40-pound block of acid.
I think this is really neat. You know, like custom cutouts in the foam. I always love that. I always love.
Oh, me too. Yeah,
that.
Pelican cases.
Yeah, Pelican cases and cutting foam. Because we used to do that a lot for shipping, you know, especially in our seismic industry. All the test gear had to go off-site. You know, and we had to, you know, test on the back of a ship, or we had to test in a factory or a warehouse or a dock somewhere, and we'd always build in, you know, test instruments into, you know, these fancy cases and stuff, and it was great.
Yeah.
It's good fun. Oh, yeah. And you can do like, and you make your own custom length mains leads, you know, that are just long enough, you know, so that it go, you know, it snakes with inside the case and it's just all.
Oh, yeah.
All beautiful. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you don't just use a regular 1 meter length of mains cable and then just have all the cords flapping all over the place like an octopus.
Oh, I see, I see.
No, okay. No, you actually custom make them to the exact length.
Huh.
You know? Yeah.
Well, yeah, that does sound... Nice. I mean, yeah, it's like... Yeah. It's. I'm trying to think. It's not like bonsai trees. There's some other thing where it's like, you know, you have like everything, you know, that whole like idea of like everything in its right place kind of idea. I feel like it's the Japanese type of, you know, like organizational system.
Right.
I don't remember what it's called though. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's probably a name for it.
So yeah, I think this will be, I mean, and there's a lot of posts online about this kind of thing as well.
There's a lot of people who've done it and everyone has a different take on it, you know? So.
Right. Right.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'd have to, I think another piece of this too is kind of, it's kind of interesting seeing how we're moving over time, right, with like laptops and tablets and all this other stuff, and you know, like throwing a tablet in there might be an interesting thing as well. I'm guessing if I'm traveling somewhere, I'd probably have a laptop still, but you know, if you really want to go extreme, you know, you put in a tablet into it or something like that, and then you make it really...
See, for me, as far as the microscope goes, see, I wouldn't put an optical microscope in there. I'd be tempted to somehow use, like, a digital microscope with a little tablet-y type screen in there or something like that.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then you could use the tablet, of course, as, you know, like an internet connection with your data sheets and everything
data sheets
else,
and
you know,
stuff and then, like that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
Mm.
Yeah, so there's the reason I bring up tablets is someone mentioned this on Twitter, actually, but there's a
and then, of course, once you've got that infrastructure in place, then you start looking at those little USB scopes and things like that, maybe instead of a real scope, perhaps, you know, because you're so constrained.
Yeah, if you
want
to go super light, right? I mean, if you don't want the infrastructure of like a full power supply and...
Well, a scope is probably the biggest thing you'd ever put in one of these things, right? It'd be your biggest item. So, well, you know, that's one of the things where a portable scope actually could be a huge advantage.
That's true. I don't think I haven't seen. So, you know, I was looking around at scopes and stuff like that, and I didn't see. I mean, there's the Osium. That's the one I've seen that works with iPads.
There's a couple of them out there, I think. But anyway, it's not a huge selection. But that comes down to your requirements that you set yourself, right? You can go, well, I want a sort of at least semi-professional kind of level, you know, capability in this thing, which means you've got to have a real scope, right? You don't have a dicky USB scope.
Right. You know, there's so for organs, actually, so not human organs, but like pianos, right? Like Hammond organs. You know, they're these big, like, consoles made out of walnut. And so, like, rock musicians, they wouldn't actually... Some of them cart these things around, but others, they actually chop them up and they put them into travel cases, kind of the same idea. And that would be interesting, right? You take a scope that you have and you refactor it into your form factor here, right?
Yes.
So that you get the super high-end, you know, sampling chips on board and you know, you can shrink down the power supply. You know, maybe you have a more modern power supply you can fit in, or you need to, like, readjust it, right? That would be interesting, you know, just trying to do that stuff. And then having a replaceable screen, right, Dave? That's what I'm saying.
Right. Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
But, this is... Now you've got me wanting to do this. Now I want to do this as a project, you know, but I put all the work into it and it makes one video out of it, you know, so it's a lot of work to...
Well, no, it'd be a couple builds. I'm sure that'd be a good build.
I could do a multiple build video, you know, here's all my requirements and I'm going to, you know, build this. Here's my case selection and, you know, here's me building all the custom internals for the case and et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you build a custom size ESD mat to fit in there. You know, one of the work mat surfaces. You know, one of those. You know, a proper.
Yeah, then
so,
you have.
You know,
you have like a retractable cord on the side that you just plug into the mains, the earth ground, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I like that.
You know, it's now you've got me wanting, lusting after. doing this, you bastard. You know, As if I didn't have enough shit to work on.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, the next step would be you have to travel anywhere, right?
Right.
Mr. I buy labs that are you know, walking distance from my house.
Right, yeah. That's right.
You can finally bring your lab home with you again, though, right? I guess that would be one thing. You could work at home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. You know. Or I could just build it and then, you know, auction it off or something, you know. It could be one of those, you know.
Yeah, Ben, yeah, actually Ben does that. They do that, Ben Heck does that.
Yep, yeah, they do that. They auction off his builds, you know.
Yeah, it's cool. So,
Well, they don't auction them off. They actually give them away, I think, you know. You enter a draw to, you know, give it away, but, yeah.
And I think he might have, actually, I might have to look at his stuff again. I think he might have done a portable bench at one point, in addition to the portable 3D printer.
Could have, so. Yeah. Yeah, likely. Very likely, yeah. But there you go.
So this this tablet thing, though, someone recommended it on Twitter, and there's actually, so it's a Spice app, right? And so I'm like, at first I'm like, oh, this is going to, whatever, you know, like, who cares?
right. Dime a dozen.
Well, you know, like, it's like, okay, I have LT Spice, I'm fine. But actually, what's interesting about this is not, I mean, it's just using a Spice, I'm pretty sure it's using a Spice engine on the back end. But right, the interesting thing is actually how it illustrates current flow. It actually shows, like, current flowing through, I mean, at least it's showing it on the demo stuff, but, like, flowing through LEDs and stuff like that, and actually, sweet, you know, where it's going from which point to which other point. And this is the first one where I'm like, oh, okay, this is where, like, you know, like some of the UI designers and kind of getting a hold of this stuff. This could be really, really interesting. So there's a free version that's Android based,
as in a visual learning tool. Yeah, I can picture this being quite good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, because that's a hard thing to do, right? You look at a schematic, right? I remember this as I was, you know, coming up, right? You look at a schematic, you see lines going everywhere, and it's like, well, which direction are those lines going? you know, it's like, oh, well, where is the current going? You know, and that's a tough concept to learn. And so this kind of showing that actually could really, really be useful during the learning process.
Totally. So,
well, I haven't had a chance to try it.
What's the name of this thing?
It's called Every Circuit.
Every Circuit.
And there's a free version, and then the paid version is $10, I think, which is...
awesome. Yeah, which is...
Yeah, it's nothing, right?
Free, almost. Yeah. It's nothing. You know?
Although I do have that mental block. I know a lot of Apple people, like, it's like priced in where, like, they just buy apps. You know, it's like, oh, no big deal. Right. For Android, for some reason, I just, I'm like, oh, well, why isn't everything free? But it's kind of silly, right?
Yeah, it's dumb.
Yeah. So, so this is on the to check out list. And I was thinking about this for, you know, because of this mobile build idea, trying to try this thing out.
It does look pretty cool, and you can get lots of awesome visualizations, and this looks very impressive. It's very colorful. Right. That's for sure.
Right.
And, you know, there's sort of all these things glow, and, you know, the current paths glow and change color and, you know, do all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff. So, yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah.
The good thing about that is that it doesn't have to really be like a kick-ass Spice engine. You know, it just has to do the basics because it's just a learning tool. You know, no one who seriously wants a Spice tool would use this, right? It's a, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is, I'm sure this is on par with, like, the, what's that one online? I've forgotten.
Oh, the web-based one, yeah.
There's a couple web-based simulators that do the same kind of thing, you know. And, yeah, I mean, they're good. They get the general idea, but yeah, you're not going to use it to, you know, design your next IC, right? I mean, you're going to, which is what a lot of the Spice, I mean, if people don't know, that's what Spice was designed for, right? I mean, you're doing,
it was.
Spice is meant for modeling semiconductor physics, and that's a lot different than what a lot of people use it for.
In fact, that's part of its name, right? Integrated, what's it stand for?
I don't know. Integrated circuit environment? Is that the ice?
Yeah. Something that's the ice, yes.
Right. Well, you know, we should work the plug-in now. So we're going to have next week Mike Engelhart from LT Spice. So he's like the guru at Linear Tech.
Yep.
He's going to be on our show next week. So
excellent.
We will ask him all about Spice.
Here you go. Spice stands for Simulation Program with Integrated Circuit Emphasis.
Oh, there we go. All right.
There you go. That's a Spice.
Yeah. We'll still have Mike Gunn, even though.
To do. It was not designed for macro level circuit design. It was designed for silicon based integrated circuits, you know?
And yep, definitely.
Yeah, they just expanded that out.
See, now, what is your history with SPICE over time? Have you used them all?
I wouldn't say I've used them all. I've used a handful of them, maybe, over the last 20 odd years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wonder if you've seen them improve over time too, because it's interesting, right? I mean, this is effectively a commoditized version of it now, right? It's being on a free app market, and that's just interesting seeing how it's changed over time. And
well, okay, and it originally is a command line tool, and it still is, right? The SPICE engine that you're talking about is just that. It is a command line tool. You feed in a netlist, a text for file, and which has all the commands, which has the netlist and everything in it, and it executes it. And regardless of what SPICE program you're using, they're just a wrapper around that. They're just a pretty wrapper. So all the innovation has gone around the wrapper. I mean, the SPICE engine hasn't changed much since the 70s when the bloody thing was invented, I don't think. It's changed a huge amount anyway.
I think there's convergence stuff. Like, they're getting better at convergence and stuff like that.
There's been improvements in the algorithm, but ultimately, it doesn't really go hugely notice. Where all the improvements have been are always been in the GUI. How easy is it to use? That's always been the question you would ask with the SPICE tool. How easy can I draw my circuit?
Right.
How easy can I get results? How easy can I get waveforms up? Right? That's, that's the thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, so we'll be asking all about that next week, and people can submit their own LT SPICE questions as well. So we'll get to that next week. Yeah,
because he's like the only guy that works on it, right?
I don't know. We'll have to ask him about that. I think he's the main guy. I don't know if he's the only guy.
He used to be. Yeah. Well, I think it started out as a fun thing he was working on the side, and then they caught on. Ooh, this is popular, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I love it. I'm excited.
Yeah. Exactly. But LT SPICE, LT SPICE is not the easiest to use. It's by far not the easiest SPICE tool I've ever used, So,
yeah.
I like it. It is the one I use. But, yeah, it's not that easy to drive, especially for first-timers. It's not that easy and intuitive. Things like these apps we've been talking about, right, they're infinitely easier. Infinitely easier to use. So, yep, there's lots of traps for young players. But LT SPICE is like a professional level tool. You can use it for serious business. It's not designed for the average Joe to come up and throw in a few components and it works.
Right. It's not that easy. Right. Yeah. I saw Paul Rako was writing about it when he was still at EDN or E-Times, whatever. He said he talked to a Maxim designer who uses it every day.
Right. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Doesn't every company have their own flavor of it now? TI have their own one, don't they? And
They were all licensing different ones.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I remember we talked about that a couple weeks back.
Yeah, we did. That's right.
Analog dropped theirs, and they were using NIs, and then available, but it's like they kind of buy their way out of it, which is whatever if they don't want to focus on it, but they all have solutions. Mm. And then there's always Orcad has it? Whatever, whoever owns PSPICE. Mentor, maybe? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's... Bloody hell. There's so many of them.
Yeah, right.
They're a dime a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
News!
What's news?
Well, it's old news, but it's hilarious news. Google record all of the Nest. They stopped... They stopped shipping them, the Nest.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Man, you hate Nest.
No, it's just hilarious to follow. It's just hilarious to follow because there's no way it's worth the billions and billions. It's just ridiculous.
It's data, man. And, I'm telling you, data's where it's at.
I'm indoctrinated
in it now.
No, I was watching I think it was a stand-up comedian, so I can't remember who. The name will not come to me. Anyway, they were talking about this sort of thing, you know, and these big buyouts for these companies that are, you know, practically, like, they've got no tangible product worth anything, really. Oh, they, you know, and they spend billions and billions of dollars. It may be that they were talking about Facebook or something, and you know, Facebook,
yeah, like Oculus or something,
IPO or something like that. They were talking about this sort of stuff, and they went, you know, if, you know, Facebook is worth $14 billion, imagine what a company with a real product would be worth. You know, it's like,
yeah,
and it's true. You know, all these companies that are just in the cloud and, you know, bullshit, and just and the valuations are just in la la land. Right. And they don't. And we were talking about this the other week. You know, when somebody buys a company with, you know, real fabs and everything that makes chips, that actually makes real tangible stuff and has real tangible assets, right? That's worth money.
Yeah, right. And well, we think so, right? We're hardware guys. Yeah, I mean, we're
exactly. And
what do we know, Dave?
I know. And some of those cheap things are cheap in comparison to all the hype surrounding, you know, this huge. It's just a bubble again, right? It's going to burst again.
Well,
right?
So
all this tech bubble's going to burst.
There's an interesting piece of news this week too. So talking about hardware, and especially a lot of these companies that are not necessarily like you know, Google has done hardware in the past. Obviously, they have the X team, which is doing hardware. That's like Google Glass and a couple others. But like other companies are doing this too, right? So Nike had started up a Fuel Band team, right? And that was, you know, a wearable device. Wearables are very big right now too. And
it basically, yes, they're all, yep. Yeah, wank, wank.
Yeah, and who else? Intel bought some wearable company for like $100 million or something as well. And so Nike had this. I think they actually started this team. But basically, it was, you know, a wearable tracker, and it worked with an iPhone, but it didn't work with Android. Mm-hmm. And basically, there was news this week that they just kind of shuttered the whole operation, rather. You know, they just said, nope, we're done.
Shut it down, yeah.
No, yeah,
because they bought it because it was all the hype and their share price, you know, jumps, and because it was the in thing to do a year or two back, right? So they did it, and now they realize, oh, it's just, you know, we're never going to make money on this, just kill it.
Right. Well, that's going to be interesting to see, you know, especially in the wearables market.
It's
going
to happen to Nest. Come on, it's going to happen to Nest. Well, I didn't finish my story. Did you hear why they actually stopped selling it?
No.
Because, right, you can wave your hands at it, right, to actually control the thing. Right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's got some, I don't know, it's got some sensor in it, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, apparently, you know, gesture-based thing. And apparently, if you wave your arms the wrong way, it turns off your smoke alarm. Right?
Oh,
it
this
shuts
is for
it
the
down.
Smoke alarm, okay.
Right? Yeah. This is for, like, it's just got stupid written all over it. It's just facepalm. Hang on. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You put a bloody, you know, pyroelectric... you put a sensor in a thing with a couple of op amps and a 9-volt battery, job done.
Yeah.
There is no reason to go high tech with this shit. It's just...
See, I wouldn't
it's just doing it for the sake of it.
I mean, I wouldn't discount it for that. I mean, I think there could be other applications.
I would.
Because they were trying to roll other stuff in there, right? That's what the ultimate thing was.
Yeah, but there's no point to it.
I wouldn't buy it myself. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
But,
it's stupid.
But that's
it's
the thing,
a fad.
Dave. No, what? This is going to keep happening, right? We're going to keep getting upset about this, but this is going to keep happening. Everybody's going to step up to the plate and say, I have the platform, right? Look at me, I have a
platform
for your home.
And they're
going to
fail every time. KISS will always win, right? All these smart light bulbs being controlled by your bloody iPhone. No, people just want a bloody switch on the wall. It's always going to win.
Well,
always.
I think people always want to pay less. I think in general, price usually wins, unless there's some other thing there, right? I mean, I say this as a cheapskate, so I'm not sure. I'm never going to buy one of these LED bulbs unless it's the same price as everything else, right? I mean, or not LED bulbs, but like the multicolor bulbs. I would buy it if there was a reason, if I think it's going to last a long time, or, you know, I think there's some other benefit, but just because I can switch it on from my smartphone and have, you know, Barry White start playing, right? You know, like
right, it's pointless. you aren't going to do that, right? Because it's a wank, right? You just want to turn your lights off and on,
right? Well, I'm torn.
And it's
I
more
feel
convenient
like
to have a permanent switch on the bloody wall.
Well, no, that's,
that you walk
I think
past
that's a backwards
as you head
look
to bed.
It.
Turn off the lights. No,
no, no, that's a backwards look.
Nah,
at it, right?
Nah, it's always going to be niche. I'm not saying it's useless, right? Some people
you
are going to have
no
a
one is ever
going to
get rid of
desire.
Their buggies and their buggy whips. What do we need these newfangled automobiles for? I mean, that's what you sound like right now, Dave. I mean, like there is
no,
there
don't.
Is a reason that people might get rid of it for usability's sake. But what I'm saying
not
is
saying
that
there's not. I'm saying mainstream is always going to be keep it simple, stupid. Mainstream is always going to be going to want it as dumb as possible.
I disagree with a caveat of I think they'll keep it simple as long as it's affordable, right? I think that's just the I think that's what it comes down to. You know, people buy what's affordable and they're not going to pay extra unless there's some actual benefit, right? This is my inner economist.
No, I'll tell you what. Even if I got all LED bulbs in my, you know, multicolored RGB bulbs all throughout my, if it was free and I had to control it from my phone, I wouldn't want it. Okay, even if they were paying me, I'll pay you $1,000 and we'll come around, we'll install all RGB bulbs in your house, but you have to control it with your smartphone. I'd tell them to piss off, right?
Okay,
I
do agree with
it.
That. I do agree. No, I do agree with that. If that was the only way of doing it, yeah, that'd be ridiculous, right? It'd be as good of just not having lights at all, right? Because then if your phone dies,
right.
You that's silly. But I think that's never the only way of doing it, right? Like even the thermostats and the smoke detectors and the Nest stuff, it's still usable, right? In its base form, it's still usable. It's really overpriced, but it's usable.
unless you wave your hands in the wrong way and then it accidentally switches off and you don't know it, and then
right,
your house burns down and you die.
Yeah, but that's something that's broken. That's something that's broken, right? We're talking about a couple different things here. One is usability. One is does it work, and another is like cost, right? All of these three things.
And the
like,
other is does it having a wank for the sake of having a wank?
Yeah, that's a cost
thing
to me, though.
The Nest alarm is. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Hmm, yeah, I think that's a cost thing.
No.
All right, well, we've reached an impasse. Dave will not be buying any Nest products. I think everybody is pretty shocked by that. See, now, okay, how about this? Would you buy a laundry folding robot?
I would rather pay a human to fold my laundry.
Yeah, but the robot has so cool, right?
Right. I mean, fold my laundry.
There you go. Yeah.
I have no need.
Right. Yeah, when everything's a t-shirt, every day is wrinkle day.
That's
I've been
it.
Learning that one good, too. The benefits of never leaving my basement.
Yeah. It also changes when you have kids. We have a room where we just dump clothes.
Nice.
That's it.
Nice. Yeah,
these clothes get
room.
Dumped on a bed, and if anything, they might be sorted into piles. That's
there
organization.
You know? Yeah. Well, I this is a project from UC Berkeley, and this is actually the first time I saw the. So the PR2 is the it's a open source robot from. Well, actually, I don't know if the robot's open source, but it uses the open source robot operating system ROS.
Right, Ross.
And
yeah,
it's from I believe it's Willow Garage is the group that actually develops the hardware, and then you know, people buy it and they develop for it. And it's I mean, it's cool to see. It's, you know, it's I'm not worried about the Terminator coming to fold my laundry anytime soon, but you know, it's just, there's baby steps.
Is it one of those ridiculous things like using an auto router to route a board? You spend more time setting it up than you're saving actual time. Is it one of those?
I think that's probably a good comparison, because it's like the 90% case, yeah, anything could, not anything, but you know, that's not the hard part. The hard part is like, okay, it could fold a t-shirt all the time, but what happens when,
right,
you know, your wetsuit comes through, right? You know, and like then
right,
it's like this new corner case, and that's what humans are good
or
at.
It's
right?
A just one-off. Yeah,
the one-off, right? That's the human thing's good at, right? They just kind of figure it out and they do it as best they can, and then they move on. Whereas a robot,
and
will just
it's just
keep going.
Like a pick and place machine. Often, yeah, if you're doing 100 boards, you know, or you know, it might be worth setting up your pick and place machine. But if you're doing 10 boards, you know, often it's not worth your time. You're better off just doing it, right? Doing it by hand.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Or
I think
you got
that's
one
a, that's
board
a separate
or five,
thing, right? I mean, if you had the intelligence in a robot that it was doing that. I mean, really, what that comes down to is economics again, right? If you're just buying a robot just to fold laundry and you fold laundry once a week, yeah, that's stupid, right? Especially if it doesn't do it well.
Right, but if you're running a gym's laundry folding service,
exactly, right. Yeah, and then it works its way down. Yeah,
right.
There's actually an interesting a graphic I saw too, and it's just talking about the kind of the current state of robots in 2014, right? Because I'm actually reading this frigging awesome book right now. It's called The Second Machine Age. You ever heard of that book?
Right.
No. It's two MIT guys, Eric Benioffson, and I forget the other guy's name. But basically,
what happened to the first machine age?
The first machine age was actually based on the combustion engine.
Oh, right. Okay.
Was it a combustion engine? Maybe a steam engine, actually. But basically, the idea was the first machine age was replacing human labor, right?
Yes, and
the
right, which would have been the steam age, yep.
Yeah, right, steam, and then moving into the combustion engine. I mean, really, they're the same kind of thing, right? They're built on the same principles of spinning something or translating motion and replacing human labor.
Yeah.
The second machine age is doing the same thing, but with computers and basically replacing human processing and stuff like that, and what that's actually going to end up doing.
So, intelligent senses, intelligent vision, and
definitely that stuff. Like I mean, that. And then moving into robotics, but then also, even like automation, like a lot of automation stuff, and not the stuff that you typically think of. Like I think factory automation, right? Like robots and pick and place and, the robots we had in the fab and stuff like that. But even automation like tax software, right? So TurboTax, it prompts you with all these things. You put in stuff yourself and basically automation is basically automating the task of filing taxes, whereas before you would hand an accountant all your tax stuff. And, that kind of stuff as well. Replace, like, mostly like a lot of, job replacement and stuff like that and how it's going to affect us. And, man, it's just... The thing that really strikes me about this book, I keep telling people about this. So they talk about the, you've ever heard the chessboard, the guy that invented chess. There's a parable about the guy that invented chess, and basically, he invented chess. Yeah, it's a parable.
But I thought chess was like 1,000 years old.
Yeah, right. That's the idea. That's why it's a parable, because they don't know who it is. So basically, he went to the king and he presented this game, or the emperor, or whatever, and he said, I give you this chessboard. All I ask is that you give me, a grain of rice for each square, and then you double it for each square.
Right, and then you get
to the end. You basically get to 64, and it's more rice. The amount of rice would be the size of Mount Everest. That's the idea.
Yes,
and
of course.
More rice than has ever been produced or ever will be, basically. And basically, though, the tipping point is at 32, at the 32nd square. And the way the guys talk about it, they actually talk about Moore's Law and the doubling of technology, right? And the 32nd square, in terms of generations of doublings, actually happened in 2006. And that just, like, thumped me in the chest. And it's like, you start thinking about what happened. Because they talk about a lot of stuff that they've done. Like they
based on what metric? Based on what?
Based generations
on what metric
of doublings.
Has it gone up by 2 to the power of... Oh, you're talking about Moore's Law, like the first transistor. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So from the inception date, every 18 months.
So the first one was one transistor on a chip and then 2, 4, 8.
Right. Right. And you think about it. I mean, like, so think back to 2006, right? Which is now 8 years ago, right? I was reminded this, that I have to get my passport redone soon. and, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, right? I mean, like, smartphones and like, they mentioned the self-driving car, but robots and just, like, a span of 8 years and how much stuff's happened in that amount of time. It's pretty significant, right? Compared to the 8 years before it and the 8 years before that, that kind of thing. And, I don't know. It's crazy to me. That's what kind of really got me. That's what dug me into this book, and I'm only about halfway to three quarters of the way through so far. So I got some more, and it's pretty economics-y, but it's a friggin' awesome book.
Of course, you love that sort of stuff.
Oh man, this is my wheelhouse. I friggin' like, because it ties together like economics, but then also technology, and then also like Like, it even has a section at the end, like, how you can benefit from this. Like, that's the chapter right. I just started. Like, awesome. How freaking awesome is yeah. that?
Yep.
So I'll let you guys know. I'll have right. something else to okay. sell next week.
goodness.
Why we start? Oh, because so there's this. But actually, there's an infographic about this that I posted this week as well, and it's talking about 2014 and all of the robots mm-hmm. that there are, and basically how you know what the current state of it is. Right. So there's 1.2 million industrial robots. There's robot pharmacists. There's self driving cars. There's you know military tech stuff like that, and you know just kind of seeing this stuff changing over time. And how it's going to end up affecting us in the future, and how you can learn more about them and stuff like that. Very cool. So,
excellent.
Future's bright, man. I'm excited. Robots. Till they kill us.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Speaking of passports, you're going to the German show, aren't you, this year?
I am, yeah. I'll be going to Electronica.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So that's in November. That's what the passport's for, actually. That's what I was thinking about. And, I'm excited, man. That's going to be huge. We talked about that 2 years ago.
It's a massive
show. Because you were thinking about maybe going to that 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. And then we started talking about how long it takes for you to get there. I didn't realize that's uh-huh. like one of the longest flights for you. So that's...
It's pretty much the longest flight on the planet, yeah.
Yeah.
From Sydney to, Hamburg or something. Yep.
Yeah, that's rough. Mm-hmm. And it's not cheap either. That's the other thing. I mean, that's, yeah, so. But, I mean, I've never been to Europe, so I have no idea what to expect. I mean.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's much shorter for you. What is it, a 10, 12-hour flight or something?
I think it's like 8, actually, yeah. 8, right. 8 from New York.
Eight. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, easy. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Not a problem.
Yeah, so, right. And then the other thing is they just announced a couple weeks ago the Open Hardware Summit will be in Rome this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it's always been in the same location, hasn't it?
It was at the New York Hall of Science. Last year it was at MIT.
Yeah, but it's all in the U.S., right? It's all.
Yeah,
it's all
yeah, in the Northeast, yeah. So definitely same area.
Well, that's weird that it's gone to Rome.
Not that weird.
Why?
Arduino's made about, like 50 miles from there. So I think that...
Oh, right. Okay. Driving it. Okay. They're probably
No, it's not them driving it, but it's just like, you know, you got to move that stuff around too, right? I mean, if you want to get different groups of people showing up too, right? That's... I think,
true.
You know, some people will travel for it, and you got to move it around, right? So hopefully next time it'll be
in
Asia.
Right, you think it might
get
a bit stale if everyone's, it's still in the U.S. again, it's all the same people coming back, it's all the same people talking, it's all the...
Yeah, you know. Right, exactly. I mean, if it's the same conference every year, that does get... I mean, they can change a little bit, but...
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't do many
conferences. See, I've turned down a couple of trips because, well, it's the same conference in the same hotel in the same location. What's the...
Right.
Like, I've been there before, like, yawn, you know...
Right,
it's okay if it's local, right? You know, or if it's in Melbourne, yeah, okay, right. I'll go there, but I'm not traveling halfway around the planet to go to the same hotel and the same bloody, you know, the same conference with the same people, and you know, it's like
right,
yeah,
right.
Not much
and then you
fun
have the same problem that like they, you know, a lot of like music bands run into this, right? Like it's like, do you keep playing the same stuff, and then you know you're called a sellout, or do you innovate and risk alienating all of your fans, right? I mean, it's the same
the
kind
fans,
of problem.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's not just music, but it's a lot of stuff.
Mm. Yep.
So, yeah, it's who knows? Who knows? Mm. And maybe those beats, I mean, maybe they'll keep moving it. I know, you know, it'd probably make sense to, you know, send it over to China at one point. And
right.
I always enjoyed
of course. Yeah.
The summit. I've gone two times now. Two times, I think.
Yep. Yeah. So. Yeah, you've been twice.
Yeah.
Yep.
I haven't
been once.
Well, you should go, man.
You'll
get out
there
eventually.
I've never been to an international maker fair. I've never been to... No.
We'll get him... Once Dave builds this, you know, once Dave builds this mobile lab, he'll have no choice but to travel.
Okay.
With a gun.
Yep.
Yeah.
Once I get the bug again, you probably won't be able to stop me, you know. Like, I just don't have the travel... You know, you're just getting the travel bug. Right, so you're going, woohoo, you know. Well, especially to new places. I know you've been a bit down on, oh, I've been traveling a lot, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, ebbs and flows.
Yep, yep.
I'm kind of a homebody, and, so.
But to go somewhere new and exciting, that is always fun, you know.
Right, yeah, exactly. Meet new fun. People, see new things, try new foods. Like, that's... Drink new beers, right?
To me, that's nothing. Like, trying new food and eating new... Like, that does not interest me at all. You know?
And that's why Dave's in shape, folks, and I'm a big fatty fat fat.
No, it's just... eating food is a necessary thing to survive, you know?
I've always wished I could look at food like that. I just can't.
Some people do... Like, it's like some people do that, right? They just go on holiday to food or to eat to shop, right? Yeah. Like...
Well, shopping, that's stupid.
I think the same thing about food as well. Like, it's just stupid. Eating just gets in the way of seeing shit. You know?
I guess so. I mean...
What? I've got to stop and have lunch? No! Because I'll often starve on a holiday, you know, because I'm too busy, like, on the go. Seeing stuff. Oh, skip lunch today. I can't stop to eat lunch, you know? I'll just...
Dave, life is the journey. It's not the destination, man. That's you gotta chill out, man. So maybe this thing will end up in China. Actually, so there was just a maker fair in Shenzhen. Actually,
yes, it was.
Did you see the thing that Ian set up? Ian from Dangerous Prototypes.
No, what did he set up?
He set up a BGA reballing seminar. So,
right, yes.
So it was with the mobile phone manufacturers within the markets. And, go ahead.
They're the ones who reball BGAs right in front of you on their glass countertop, you know, as you wait.
Right. I mean, these guys are like wizards. And, so they get to... So basically, they saw all the tips and tricks from guys that are and they're not doing it with much. I mean, like they're doing, you know, they have stencils and stuff like that, but it's there's not much to it.
Hmm.
So no, it's crazy. So, and I think so. I was talking to Ian on Skype the other day, and he said the craziest thing about it that blew my mind is that they use what was it? It was a no flux or dry flux or dry solder paste. I think that's what it was. It was. Dry solder paste. Does that sound right?
Can you even get dry solder paste?
It was something weird. It was something dry. I remember the word dry.
Right. Well, there's gel based.
Wouldn't work. No? Because the idea was that it didn't stick to the stent. Right. So you use a stencil to re-stencil the balls, and then you know you heat it up, and then they form up into little tiny balls of solder.
Yeah.
And there was something about not sticking to the stencil. And that was just I've never tried this, right? So, apparently like 40 people went to the thing and Ian said they might try and do it again in the future. And I'd love to do that. That'd be cool as hell.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So, very cool. And it's good to hear from him again, too. It seemed like I think he moved his business or something over there. And so he's been doing lots of cool stuff though, and so keep an eye on Dangerous Prototypes, folks. They're doing cool things. Actually, they had this other thing. The where the hell was it? It was like PCB routing for open source hardware. So DirtyCircuits.com is actually by them, and basically they'll actually route a board for you if you want them to. And then they also started some PCB service as well. So kind of like.
Right.
Doing that kind of stuff as well.
They don't do it themselves, though. They outsource it to somebody else, and they just handle all the transaction and
stuff, think so.
Don't they?
Yeah, right, right.
Right.
But he said he had, I mean, the site says they have people in-house, too, so, you know, that's great.
Right. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Cool.
So very cool, and keep an eye. I mean, obviously, Dangerous Prototypes has been doing cool stuff for a long time, so I like those guys. They're great.
Are PCB layout designers an endangered species?
Ah, that's a good question. So this was Maxfield who wrote this article.
Clive Maxfield.
I didn't understand the title at first. Did you understand this?
I have not read the article. I've just read the title. Are PCB layout designers an endangered species?
Yeah. So I thought it was like, you know, is it like the end of layout, right? There's no one to do layout because auto router and stuff like that.
He's talking about, here we go, there have been a spate of recent announcements about astoundingly cunning PCB layout technology by, you know, a lot of your high-end, makers of the high-end tools, of course. And, you know, your Mentor Graphics of the world and ones like that. Apparently they've got these new whiz-bang layout.
Sure.
Tools, but no.
They're talking about the people. Like people that are just doing layout, right? So this is what you started doing, is that right? Is this how you started?
I didn't start, but I have been a full-time company's full-time PCB designer. Yeah. All the designs would come to me, you know. There'd be a whole bunch of design. Like I'd also do, you know, it wasn't just my only it wasn't my only job. I also did some design work as well. But if anyone had a board to lay out in the company, it would come to me.
Right. And so I've worked at places where there's been like a couple people that were doing just doing layouts.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And so that's who he's talking about here, right? I was thinking when I first glanced at it, I was like, oh well, are they getting rid of like layout, thinking like, oh, auto routers are getting better and stuff like that. That's a load of malarkey. If that happens, it probably will be past the time when I'm working on boards ever again.
there's lots of advantages to having the same person or the same department do your layouts over and over and your schematics and stuff like that. They've got all the libraries down pat. They're going to have use consistent, libraries, and they're going to use consistent layout techniques. They're going to use consistent bed of nails, test point, systems. There's a lot of advantage to, you know, they know what parts are in the inventory, so they're going to reuse parts and stuff like that. They'll handle the bombs and all that sort of stuff. And there's lots of advantages to standardizing on the person or at least the procedure for doing.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely that. I think outside of that, too, the designers I've always worked with, they just knew way more than I ever would know, right? I mean, like, impedance matching and, you know, like, routing out channels and stuff like all of just the really tough stuff in PCB layout, right? They lived that. They breathed it, right? I mean, that's why you're probably so good at it, right? I mean, like, you just, you know it because you have to go figure it out, right?
I did it all day, every day. And then you intimately know your board manufacturer, know what their limitations are, know what their capabilities are, all that sort of stuff. Whereas, you know, if Joe Blogg's engineer comes along, oh, I got a new circuit, I'm going to lay out a board, and then, it's unmanufacturable.
Right.
You know, because they just didn't know. They just didn't know. Yeah, they might be a very good PCB design engineer, but if you don't know your limitations, your capabilities of your system and your suppliers and your manufacturers and everything else, your assemblers, then, well, you're going to get a shitty product out the other end, or you risk getting a shitty product. So
Definitely. Well, know? I think Max is asking a question. I mean, it's a good question here, actually, because I think traditionally, the traditional role where it's like every single board had to go through the CAD group and stuff like that, that's definitely not happening, right? This is just a stratification experience.
I mean,
people can go grab KiCad or Eagle or something like that, and they can go push a board to Oshpark, right? I mean, unless the company puts something in place where you can't do that. I'm saying that that stuff's available now, right? You can do it. You can do small stuff without rocking the boat. Whereas in the past, when it was like you had to have a $5,000 seat, you had to go to the, you know, and get a full, you know, prototype run done with $500 some dollars, right?
That just wasn't possible. $500,000, you know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. So I think
that's the way it used to be. You know, it was $500 to $1,000 to spin a board, right? People are so used to, you know, you can get one for $20 if you wait a couple of weeks, you know?
Yeah.
Game's totally changed.
Right, definitely. And I think that's what he's bringing up here. And it's like, I think it's just what it ultimately is just more people doing layout stuff. I think that actually is going to increase the need for like the expertise because, you know, there's there's still specialized tools. People will standardize on the lower end tools like the KiCads and the Eagles and stuff like that for just the small stuff. And then there's no reason to even learn it if it's like, oh, well, I've got this guy at my company who uses the, you know, the Cadence stuff or uses the Altium stuff, and they're really, really good with it, and they can do all the fancy keystrokes and fanciness, right? And yeah, that's going to stick around, I think. But it's not going to be a growth industry. Yep. It's not going to be like, we need, you know, thousands and thousands of new PCB layout designers, right? It's, we need experts. That's actually another thing in that book.
Well, people...
Man, I love that book. Yeah. It's actually... So this is kind of interesting here, too, because basically the idea is, if you're not first, you're last, right? So if you're not at the top, right? It's all power law distribution stuff. If you're not in the short head, right, of like, you get all, you know, basically you get all of the work, right? You're the Apples where you're selling all the computers. You're the, you know, you're selling all the iPods and stuff like that. You know, you're the top of your field. You're getting all the requests. You're automatically last, right? There is no silver medal. That's kind of the idea in this new economy that we're living in. And I think that this kind of fits into that, right? If you're not the top PCB designer who's like sought after, right, doing the very fanciest stuff, then you're doing nothing, right? You're not going to be doing some small little board with a $10,000 design package. So
okay.
I love that book. I gotta finish it so I can speak about it with more authority. So probably reread it, yeah.
So then you can have a wank over the next book that you get obsessed with.
Dude, I love reading. I love reading and pretending I know what I'm talking about. Bit,
like, it's like every book you read changes your life. You know, like, oh no, then, you know, I gotta change my life. I've gotta do all this stuff. It makes so much sense. If I just do this, I'll be rich and famous. And
probably not, but you know.
Right, you know, well, yeah.
At least
I'll
have something to talk about on the show. How about that?
Right, exactly. Oh, boy.
You're just a cynical old man. You need to reinvigorate yourself with a new office and a new lab built into a suitcase. That's what you need to do.
I'm going to go do that right now because we're over time. I'm going down the road. I'm going to talk to the real estate agent. And
good.
Yep.
Good stuff, man. Well, good luck in your search. Well,
just like you reading these books, nothing will come of it.
Well, whatever.
You heard it here first.
All yeah, right. People can get their questions in for Mike of LT Spice. We'll have a Reddit post about that, so be sure to do that for next week.
Cool.
Talk to you then.
Bye.